So this week you wanted to talk about movie openings, right?
Yeah, more like opening titles than movie openings. Okay. Did I not make that clear before?
I'm happy to talk about anything. There's all sorts of different movie openings, right? So opening titles were a really big thing once upon a time.
I think they still are. If you look at series, there's a whole industry on it.
What sort of thing are you thinking in particular?
Well, I was interested in, I was watching old films. I think it was when we were watching Rope for the one-shot episode.
Oh, yeah. Hitchcock always had that sort of thing, yeah.
I mean, anything from like the 40s and 50s, they just had every single person's name up front.
Full credits.
You had to sit through. Yeah, full credits before the film. And so that way, at the end, you just get the end and then everyone leaves.
Yeah.
It's kind of opposite to now.
It is nicer to the cast and crew, right?
Yeah. It means that you actually get to see it.
Yeah.
Even if you end up leaving the film halfway through.
Yeah.
You've still seen the credits.
Yeah. You know who the best boy was.
The most important.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you said there's a whole industry around it as well. But so I immediately go to, when I think of openings and opening credits and opening titles, it's TV now.
There was like a meme or something that I saw that was, you know, you spend, as a VFX artist, you spend 45 weeks.
There's skip now button.
Yeah, exactly. I was interested in how that's changed, because like if you take something like Dexter, do you remember the opening for Dexter? Did you watch it?
I did watch Dexter. I watched enough of Dexter that I should remember the opening credits.
Oh, you should
Dexter.
Definitely know the opening credits. It was the first one that did the like slow motion actions where everything looked like it was murder, but he was making breakfast. Remember?
Does Hannibal do something similar? Maybe. I mean, it's a similar kind of show.
Yeah,
that's a great show. I like that show a lot. Yeah. It's a really interesting show for going from procedural into like, what is going on? By the last season of Hannibal, it's just mental. And they're in Europe and everything's all over the place. It was great. No, it didn't not make sense. It was just not what it started as at all.
Okay.
Opening credits of Dexter. Wait, let me just watch them quickly.
Well, what was interesting about it, I think it won awards. I should have looked that up. I'm pretty sure it won an award.
For the opening credits?
For the opening credits, yeah.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Those are fantastic credits. Yeah.
And then what was interesting about it as well was in season three, I think it was season three, where there's been quite a shift. I mean, this is a spoiler, but it's Dexter from like 10 years ago. So whatever.
No spoilers for Dexter Origins or whatever the new one is.
I watched the pilot of that. Yeah. No. Anyway.
Yeah.
It was either season three or season four where he's had a baby.
Yeah.
So he's exhausted. And so they did a different opening sequence where all of the things that he's getting right in the proper one, he just keeps missing and getting wrong because he's half asleep, you know?
Oh, right. Okay.
Because the original opens with the mosquito. He gets the mosquito on his arm. And then when they redid the titles, he like misses it because he's half asleep.
This is ringing a bell now you're saying it. It's such a long time ago that I watched Dexter.
Yeah.
And that was a good show at one point in time as well.
When we watched the pilot for the new one,
yeah,
we were like, this is really trashy. Almost intentionally trashy. And then we were like, wait, was the original also really trashy? We just don't remember because it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was quite trashy.
It's for a really weird era of TV, isn't it? The show that immediately came to mind when you're talking about Dexter and the opening credits for Dexter is True Blood, which was a similar... Did you watch that similar period of time?
I didn't, but it came up on when I was looking for different opening titles. True Blood came up.
And it's a fantastic opening song.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that show.
Yeah.
Again, up until a point, that's another show that went wildly off the rails.
Mm.
At a certain point, you know, 4 or 5 seasons in.
It's vampires, right?
Yeah, vampires in the South.
Fun.
And then as time goes on, did you watch Once Upon a Time? I feel like you did.
Yeah, you told me to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Similar thing where it's like, it starts off with core concepts of a few supernatural bits and pieces.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's Disney, obviously, that they're doing. But then it spirals out of control into, we've got to get more you know, werewolves and now man bears, and you know, they just like pile things. It's a hat on a hat on a hat on a hat eventually. Like, so True Blood, at a certain point there's like pixies and things.
Oh,
it goes
what?
Off in this. Yeah, it goes off in,
like in is it in the film What We Do in the Shadows, where they run into the werewolves, they have the like stand up.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. One of the other reasons that I wanted to talk about opening titles, I mean, there's loads of different things we could talk about with this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Obviously, yeah, iconic series, TV series intros, but also specifically how opening titles are done. Like, did you ever see Almost Famous?
No, I don't think I did. Is that from the 90s?
Yeah, it's like a Kate Hudson.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember who the kid in it, but it's basically
it's the cover. She's got like glasses on.
Yeah, she's got this big furry coat.
Yeah. I think I know the DVD cover in my head.
Yeah.
Like having seen it on a Blockbuster wall. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very, yeah, exactly that era. So it's a kid who wants to be a music journalist who ends up going on tour with this band that are based on Creedence Clearwater, but aren't really them, you know.
Oh, okay.
And the opening credits is someone like him, but obviously not him, but someone supposed to be him, handwriting all the names out in pencil.
Oh, that's nice.
And I thought that was really interesting. So that was also...
It's different, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure that has been done in different iterations, but when you see something like that for the first time, whether it's, you know, been done before, it's being brought to a new audience or whatever it is. Napoleon Dynamite. Now you're saying about that kind of opening.
Yeah.
I feel like the opening of that is a very sort of handwritten notes and things, right? Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Yeah, which works with what you're about to see, you know, because the opening titles is kind of it's a calling card.
Yeah.
Right? It's the first thing you see. It's telling you what you're going to, you know, like Star Wars, obviously, it's a classic.
Setting the tone.
Setting the tone, exactly. Yeah. And there are times when that completely misses. Like, there was a film that I saw at Berlinale, which was part of the market screening. So, like, people trying to get distribution.
Yeah.
The opening credits were so interesting because it was like a seascape, really sort of sad British sea, and the do you know what I mean? It wasn't like Palm Beach or anything, it was like all greys and blues, and then the opening titles were a really bright yellow in quite a surprising font, and I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Oh,
I wonder where this is gonna go, and it made the opening scene more interesting
through that kind of juxtaposition.
Yeah It was like something interesting is happening here, like I'm intrigued to know what's going to go on. Kind of like, I mean, obviously we've talked about it, but Saltburn did that.
Yeah, Saltburn has nice titles. I mean, as much as anything, it sounds a little bit crazy to say, but font sets the tone so incredibly.
Massively.
So incredibly well. Like, and the subtlety of, did you see Long Legs?
No, we talked about it last time. I thought it was spiders.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, I didn't love everything about Long Legs, but there were some incredible just fonts in Long Legs and some incredible titles at various different points that really draw you in.
It's funny you say about fonts, because one of the ones that I was thinking about is Moon with Sam Rockwell.
Oh, yeah.
Did you watch that?
I mean, years and years ago. Yeah, I don't remember the fonts on it.
It's so dated. I think it's, is it early 2000s, like 2006 or something?
Oh, it must be. Yeah, yeah. It was the first thing I ever saw him in.
Yeah, and he's brilliant.
Yeah.
They'd obviously just discovered how to do font mapping in terms of like panning it or like fitting it onto different objects, because you have this incredible film that's like such a small production for what it is. Like, it's just what that one space.
Yeah.
But the opening credits is like all of the letters are like leaning so that they fit into a box that's kind of twisted, and you're just like, just looks really tacky and really dates it.
It just looks like a toy that they're playing with for the first time.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Like someone went, oh, look, we can do this. And then they were like, sure, do that, rather than, like, no, we're not going to do that. We'll do something that will last longer, you know.
Well, and as you said, like, do something which is specifically thinking about the tone and mapping to the tone of the film.
Mm.
I was listening to I think it was John Huston.
Mm-hmm.
This is just outside of just openings, but people talking to him about a John Huston style of film.
Okay.
And he was saying, well, I don't really have my own style. I'm not an auteur. I don't have like a style that I impose onto films. I just do what's required and relevant for that specific film.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great approach, especially when you think about openings and about setting that specific tone for that specific thing. Not, I do love some Wes Anderson films, but not just doing the same thing stylistically and aesthetically every single time,
yeah,
regardless of what story you're telling.
Yeah, and as much as I hate to admit it, Tarantino's pretty good at that.
Oh, his films are so visually distinct from one another.
And they work for what it is. Like, the font for Hateful Eight is straight out of
a
spaghetti western classic.
It's the sort of thing where if you put on a film on Amazon Prime where it's like way down the list and it's something that you've never heard of and you're giving it a chance, you can so easily and quickly tell based on the opening. We put something on the other day and I could tell within 30 seconds, I'm not going to like this. I don't want to watch this. This is cheap. The fonts are bad. It's like Calibri or Comic Sans. You know, the fonts are stock fonts.
Yeah.
The opening, it speaks a lot to what's coming next, like you say.
That reminds me of, it must be an SNL sketch, the Ryan Gosling one where
Papyrus.
He's the Papyrus, yeah, for Avatar. Yeah.
It's the story of him coming up with the font for...
Maybe I just saw the Avatar 2 one where he's like traumatized because... He was really sad that they used Papyrus, and then he's relieved with the second one until he realizes that it's just Papyrus in bold.
Oh. My God, yeah.
Awful.
Yeah, it is exactly that.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
One thing you made me think of a minute ago, which I hadn't thought of at all in thinking about openings, was Succession.
Succession was really good, yeah.
Great opening. Do you know what it's from?
Oh, it is from something. I think you've told me this before. What was it?
Yeah, it's pulled straight out of The Game.
Ah, yeah, yeah. We talked about this.
Yeah, the Michael Douglas film from the 90s. I think it's, is it early David Fincher, The Game?
Don't know.
Yes, it is. It's one of his early films. The exact, the at least just pulled straight out of it. The exact aesthetic is what they're doing there.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic aesthetic and it makes perfect sense
for that,
in that context.
For sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the game is very similar in its setup because it's an investment banker who's been left a huge amount of money by a father. Yeah, aesthetically, just Succession just rips that straight off.
Like you say, it does work for that.
Mm.
I was talking to my brother about the fact that we were doing this episode and I had like
three
or four interesting things to talk about, and then just from talking to him, ended up with like 20 on this list.
You start to spiral with it.
Yeah.
We didn't even get into talking about Star Wars at all, right?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about Star Wars.
I know, but it's tone-wise, it's setting up exactly what they were trying to do. It's smart. It's Flash Gordon, right? It's those old pulp serial films.
Mm-hmm.
Like with The Game as well, and going into Succession, it's taking an explicit reference point and then just doing that. Because tonally, that's what you're trying to set up.
Yeah.
Like with anything with filmmaking, it's a visual shortcut to get to where you need to go quicker.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it. I mean, I was talking about The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah.
So iconic, and nothing has ever really done that again.
I went and saw that band with my dad.
Did you? Did they have other songs that you know?
Alabama 3, yeah. They have a few other songs that I know, because I've listened to that album before.
Ah, okay.
And my dad likes their stuff, and I think they were playing in Bristol, so just went to see Alabama 3. It was great, yeah.
I think I remember that.
And everyone's like, play The Sopranos.
Did they play it last?
Do you know what? They did play that song, but it was not Play The Sopranos. It was a crowd that were very into their music, and they actually put on a really good show, completely divorced from that song. You know, everything they did was just kind of chaotic and fun and entertaining and not what you would have expected, I don't think.
Yeah.
Fantastic opening.
It is amazing. And I've just realized talking about, I mean, this is now not opening titles, but songs. BoJack Horseman.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a Song Exploder episode about it, which is so interesting. Yeah,
I've listened to that. Yeah, they go into the history of making that song, right?
Yeah, because it's the guy from the Black Keys.
Yeah.
It was the first song that he made when he was setting up his studio and he was just playing around and made something and then left it. And then years later...
some of the test sounds are what he ended up using as the
a lot of it.
Sort of baseline of it,
which is such an amazing song.
Is part of that story that he was bouncing it backwards and forwards with his uncle?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
It's his uncle who added all the brass.
Right, okay.
That's which is like what brings it all together. Yeah, amazing.
Makes it, yeah.
Then you have things that go completely in the other direction, like the Atlanta openings.
Remind me of how that goes. I have seen Atlanta. I don't remember what the opening was like.
Would literally just be a still, like a static shot on a really cool design, but a real thing, like a floor or wallpaper. With just Atlanta. That was
right.
It. That's what you needed.
Inside Number 9, if I'm thinking about openings as well, super subtle, just they will have a shot early on which moves to the 9, whatever that 9 is in the context of that episode. Yeah,
very cool. So one of the things that I was thinking about as well for openings is, do you remember that film that we saw at TIFF, Mr. K?
Oh, with Crispin Glover.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Well, it was billed as a surreal comedy, right? Like a dark comedy.
It was a Dutch production, right?
Well, I don't know, because it had so many production companies at the beginning that even the audience, it wasn't just us, the whole audience were like, is this it? Is this part of the comedy? That it was like 10 or 11 of these production logos, and then there'd be a pause and everyone was like, okay, the film's going to start. And then there'd be another one. This has to be a joke.
Yeah, and that's another sign of
needing money.
Well, no, you can kind of tell what you're getting with that, right? When a production comes up and there's a lot of different production companies associated with it, you can tell it's going to be something which is a bit more independent.
For sure.
A bit more off the wall and interesting very often. It's not, you're not going to get, like, we watched The Meg 2 yesterday.
Classic.
There's not a lot of production companies associated with The Meg 2, right? Even though it's not an opening in itself, setting up those production companies and those production title cards, it is setting a tone.
Yeah.
If I go and see something at an independent theatre and there's lots of those production companies associated with it at the start of the film, I'm like, okay, that makes perfect sense. If I go and see something at a mainstream theatre with that, it's like, oh, that's
weird.
Strange. That doesn't track for the environment that I'm in.
Yeah.
With openings in general, I think one of the top things that came to mind, very controversial for some reason, but very, very, very famous opening, is 2001.
I don't remember what the titles.
No. Not
you
the
mean
titles.
The opening?
The opening, like the first section.
Yeah, of the when the thing arrives.
Yeah, so the monolith with the monkeys.
Yeah.
What do you think of that opening as an opening to that film?
What do I think of it?
Yeah, because I remember speaking to people when I was younger who hated it. Because it was slow and it was long and it was, but it's, again, it sets everything up, right? It sets up the tone for what's coming next. It sets up the pacing for what's coming next. It even sets up the whole plot.
It is the whole plot.
Exactly. It sets up the whole plot for like the different stages that come afterwards, right?
The reason I'm kind of can't answer how do I feel about it is because, I don't know, it's like, saying how do you feel about water, it's like so do you know what I mean, like it's the beginning of 2001, it's like so integral to film history and to that film in particular, and it's been, you know, Barbie redid it.
Well, I was thinking about that as well with Barbie, where I initially watched Barbie and thought, oh, why are they doing that, I don't really get why they would do that, and then thought about it more and it does map the same thing. It's not one for one, but 2001, you see the monolith. The monolith is associated with starting the next stage of human evolution every time you see it. And Barbie, we start off like that, echoing to that film, because by the end of the film, it's the next stage of Barbie's evolution, right? As the character, she's like come out
of. Yeah, except she's not evolved at all.
In the world of the film, in what they think they're doing, that's what they've done. She's at the OBGYN at the end, right? That's what they think that they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about Barbie.
You don't want to do another episode about Barbie?
I mean, Barbie's evolution, I think that's, a stretch, but
that's what they're trying to do, right? I'm not saying that they do it effectively or that it's correct, but like that's what they're trying to do with
that's what they're trying to do, and yeah. In keeping with the rest of the film, they are copying something that was better.
Yeah,
but on this, like, openings and setting the tone for the whole film, is it the thing where they start, they arrive on a boat and there's people shouting in Norwegian as they leave? I think it is the thing. But it's at least that era of horror. I'm sure it's a thing. Because what those characters are shouting in Norwegian is basically the plot of the film.
Right.
So you have this like weird spoiler if you if you speak Norwegian.
Yeah.
Apparently there's a similar thing in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., but I haven't seen it.
What, the original TV show or the Henry Cavill thing?
The film where there's like Russian code at the beginning and it just tells you the whole plot.
Oh, okay.
It's like, why do that? You're just ruining it for so, like, for so many people.
How do you translate that as well?
Well, you don't. So it's like, we don't know what it is.
Oh, okay.
Unless you speak Russian or Norwegian.
No, I just mean like in when it's showed in Russia, how do you...
That's what I mean. You just cut out that audience.
Right, yeah.
Because then they're like, oh, well, that's the whole plot of the film. Great.
I mean, I get why you would do that to some extent. No, actually, I don't.
No, I don't think like there's any reason to do that.
It's smart if you do it in like an alien language or something like that. Or if there's, you know, if you did like a Lord of the Rings with Elvish or something. Yeah. Or Klingon with Star Trek, right? You know, like they explain the whole plot of the film in Klingon at the start. Although there's people that speak Klingon, so you're cutting out Klingon. That audience.
But then those people would probably really love getting that spoiler.
Oh, they would be so into that because they've learned a language for that reason,
for it, exactly.
People didn't learn Russian so that they could understand the beginning of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. with Henry Cavill.
No,
or maybe
not.
some people did
but you know, I doubt it. Yeah. It's Futurama, isn't it, where they have like complete alien languages as well, the written languages.
Would you call it Easter eggs or just really fine details?
I guess taking Easter eggs to a whole new level if it's an entire language.
They had some very, very, very smart people writing on Futurama.
Mm.
Yeah, talk about openings. That's pretty bloody good opening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Concise as well, you know, great music. Mm-hmm. Again, setting tone. There's a lot of, again, Easter eggs within that opening.
Mm-hmm.
Little bits and pieces setting up some of the technology, the ship and everything.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about a couple Simpsons already, but as well. So many. Yeah, Simpsons and yeah. South Park.
Yeah, yeah, iconic.
Yeah, yeah.
The sign of an opening that is really great is obviously that you're not going to press that skip button when it's on a streaming platform. And it is rare that that sort of thing comes up. So with Futurama, for example, versus The Simpsons, Futurama's opening is short enough that you're not going to bother to skip it, most likely.
Mm.
Whereas The Simpsons is a quite extensive opening, if you think about it. They go through all these...
But it's its own journey.
It is. And it's great. I don't necessarily want to watch it every time. And there are truncated versions of it as well, right?
Yeah. And the thing that's interesting about that is you have the changes, right? Because you have the blackboard is different each time. And then what happens when they arrive in the sofa?
The couch gag, right?
Is that what that's called?
That's what they call it, the couch gag.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So when I was thinking about the opening of Star Wars, I actually thought about the opening of Spaceballs before I thought of the opening of Star Wars.
Right.
With the ship just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like Red Dwarf.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Also sets the tone because you have that loneliness and the kind of scale of it.
Yeah.
But it's also comedy.
Yeah. When you say about the tone of that, that there is a... it's very British, right? Now that I think about it for 5 seconds, it's very, very bleak.
Yeah, it's
bleak. As a core
everybody's
concept.
Dead, Dave. Like, it's really, really
yeah,
bleak.
It's,
yeah,
it's very, very bleak. Did you ever watch Blake 7?
No.
Oh, man. It was, I think it may have been a bit earlier. Yeah, it was a bit earlier than Red Dwarf. It's a British science fiction TV show from, I want to say, the 1970s. It might be 80s. It's so British in that it's bleak and futile and It's these people fighting against these bigger oppressive forces, and everyone dies. Everyone dies. Sorry, big spoiler for Blake 7, but it's so relentlessly bleak. It's very, very good. It's worth going back and watching.
Mm.
There is an inbuilt sense with modern American science fiction that things are going to kind of progressively get better, regardless of where you start from.
Yeah.
Deep Space Nine, the Star Trek show, they start with this space station, which is in ruins. By the end of it, everyone's friends. not exactly everyone's friends, but like everything's tidied up. Everything's nicer. You know, they go through trials and tribulations and stuff. Yeah. But it's not everyone dies.
Yeah.
It's not relentless bleakness. It's not that, tragic Britishness.
Yeah, where somehow that's funny that literally everybody's dead.
Oh, it's so funny.
So talking about skipping the streamers.
Yeah.
One of the things that came up in looking at opening titles was Westworld.
I'm going to remind myself of the Westworld
title. Westworld was one of the first, I think it was one of the first where it was that CG animation of all of the 3D printing. And again, really setting the tone for what the show is about.
Yeah.
It feels like one of those classic things where streamers went, oh, this works. And so they did it for everything.
Mm.
The Crown had it with it printing a crown. And it was like, that doesn't make any, okay, it's the Crown, we get it, but that's not telling us anything about the tone of the show.
Yeah, and it's like we were saying earlier with toys that you can play with, that you play with too much, right?
Ah, for the moon titles thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you've got a new toy, so we're going to use it for everything.
Yes.
Regardless of whether it makes any sense to use it.
And then that stuff doesn't hold up.
No, oh God, no, it looks so dated when you overuse something like that. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much my list.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wait, no, I was also going to talk about Bond, but that's like a whole other thing.
In terms of just the openings?
In terms of how...
iconic?
How iconic and how it becomes even a part of like a Pixar short, right?
Right.
You go and see a Pixar film, you're also excited to see the short.
Yeah.
But with Bond, it's like, who's going to do the song? What are the titles going
to
be?
I would need to look back at Bond, but there's pretty much always a cold opening, right?
Yeah.
Pretty unusual for films.
Yeah.
You see that more in TV, generally.
Oh my God. Speaking of cold openings and titles, I'm just thinking of The Office now.
Oh God. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
In a very similar way to The Simpsons now, I think about it, with that kind of iconic cold open title that is a short story in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching something the other day about the Lord of the Rings opening.
Oh.
The very first film. They have a, I think, 7-minute exposition dump where they're telling the story of what happened before the films, so the creation of the rings, etc. and so forth.
Yeah, I don't remember.
There's a voiceover and there's a narration to it, because I think that they had screened the film without that and the studio said
you gotta
have an opening to this, because we don't
you gotta tell people where you gotta
explain what's going on. And they basically have a short film at the start, right, where it's a three act structure within this 7 minutes of explaining the history of the ring getting from where it started to where it is now. So it's like the ring's journey within that opening. They're very smart.
I've got no idea where to go with this.
So the problem with openings is finding a closing to the opening that was this episode.
Do you have a favourite?
A favourite opening?
Mm.
It's like you said with, it's like asking about whether you like water or not, because I think 2001, probably a bit of a wanky answer, but I do remember people saying to me, I don't like that opening.
Yeah.
Before I'd watched it, and then being baffled by people not liking it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my favorite opening of all time. And I mean, the music, everything. Yeah. What about you?
Well, I was thinking as you were saying that, I was like, fuck, you're going to ask me.
Simpsons?
A few. No, I think if we're talking about openings rather than opening credits.
Yeah.
Up. Pixar.
Oh, again, that's a short film.
It's a short film.
Yeah.
I remember reading a review at the time when it came out saying only Pixar can reduce an entire adult audience to tears in 5 minutes with no dialogue.
Yeah.
Incredible storytelling.
Oh, yeah, that is brutal.
Honestly, a lot of Disney have really, really good openings.
Okay.
I rewatched 101 Dalmatians, the animated one from the 60s, And the whole opening titles, obviously it's animated, but it's also animated kind of about animation. Like you have the outline of the dogs and then it gets filled in with the music and then the spots become the music notes, and it's just so clever.
Right, right.
I'm trying to think of a more wanky one. And then actually in a more recent, I mean, you know, we've talked about TV series, Severance was brilliant, brilliant openings.
Sure.
Have we talked about Mike Tyson Mysteries?
I don't think we've talked about it on here. I mean, I did like that show.
Oh, I love that show. And the opening is so good because it's really playing up to this Hanna-Barbera style.
Sure.
Where actually nothing that you see in the openings ever happens in any of the episodes.
Yeah. I love that as a device. I don't know if you remember, there's an episode of Community where they have a flashback episode. And none of the flashbacks are things that we've ever seen in the show. It's just like from episodes that they've completely invented for the flashbacks.
Brilliant. I don't think there's a... I don't think I have a favourite.
It's Horses for Courses, right? Bojack is fantastic, yeah. But if it sets up what it's doing next well and it's engaging while you're watching it, so Bojack does that perfectly, right? Mm-hmm. It sets up the tone of what's coming next. The music is fantastic. The visuals are fantastic. You can quite happily sit and watch it and not click the skip button.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got that's the ingredients of good opening.
And also Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Oh, yeah.
I would rarely skip
exposition
that
in a good way. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that is quite a complex world that you're being introduced to. Mm-hmm. And so just introducing some of the basic backstory like that.
Yeah, yeah. So useful that they even used it in actual dialogue in the Netflix one.
Ugh, yeah. Just spout it out.
Long
like
ago.
Yeah. The Four Nations lived in harmony. But then the Fire Nation attacked.
I hate that I'm going to remind you of this, but you're probably going to want to
call to action. Call to action. Make sure to like and subscribe. Episodes every other Wednesday, right?
Basically every other week, yeah.
Yeah. All right, bye.